Howdy, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with Anthony Fantano and Paul Dano. I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. We got Phil in the booth. Let's get going.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap. Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
One of the other situations that's like that is me and Isabel have two times done a vacation where you have to do the timeshare meeting, but you get like four nights for like $100, but you have to show up to the timeshare meeting. Once you show up to the timeshare meeting, getting out of the timeshare meeting as quickly as possible is obviously what you want to do. You don't want to be sitting there listening to their pitch for 2 hours because they think they can get you.
Yeah.
And Isabel is so hilariously willing to just like self-humiliate to get the idea across. They'll be like, so how much do you usually spend on vacation? She'll be like, $20. I'll be like, that's not even a believable lie.
She gets like, what, two cups of coffee?
And they're like, what do you mean? Like, don't you stay at a hotel? She's like, no, we'll stay on a friend's couch. The guy was like, the two of you? She's like, yeah.
Yeah, same couch. She's just like, Drew, just making up lies like really fast.
And they're like, do you not get the flights there? And she's like, no, we'll take a train. And they're like, that still seems like it'd be more than $20. How do you do vacations that cheap?
I know the conductor. We get him for free.
And then it's like I'm about to start arguing with Isabel because I'm like, that is too insane a lie.
They're like, how do you get there? How do you travel there? It's like, we walk there.
Yeah, she becomes, what's your character, Drew, who just disagrees.
Yeah. That's awesome, though. I guess they can't.
Never vacationed.
Never done it before. I assume $20.
She legitimately told the person that we both sleep on one couch. That's not like me doing a, like, you know, elevating what she said. That was a legitimate claim I heard come out of her mouth to try to get us out of the timeshare meeting as quickly as possible.
They're like, how do you sleep on one couch together? Like, just one on top of the other. Like, hamburger style. It's like, hamburger style? We're not folding paper. That's cool, though. I've never done a timeshare, but that does sound interesting. It sounds like, I don't know. Well, a timeshare, like, that's a commitment of, like, that's not just one vacation, right? That's, like, y'all kind of all...
The pitch is one vacation.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's, like, they're trying to sell you a timeshare, so they're letting you stay at the timeshare hotel for, like, four nights for, you know, $100 or whatever.
We did that a lot as a family, where my parents would have to just spend half a day doing bullshit while we got to be on vacation.
Well, Isabel is very sensitive to this and willing to be annoying to them because her parents got by a timeshare when she was growing up, so she's very resentful
my parents
of timeshare.
Never did. Couldn't happen to them. At that point, why go on the timeshare vacation? I feel like you guys can afford a regular vacation.
What else has been going on with y'all? Do you want to get into media roundup? You have anything...
Sure. I tried broiling a grapefruit this morning. It is pretty good. I don't know if that's media roundup, but recipe roundup. Little all sugar right. on a grapefruit, broil it. It's kind of delicious to eat and warm.
I've never heard of that. Should I try it? That sounds like something that would go viral. That sounds like a food hack you'd see on TikTok.
This is old school. This is like hotels in the 90s would do this. Like, that's like the kind of recipe it is.
Steve Harvey. This is how Steve Harvey eats his grapefruit.
Oh, he's like, now see, I'm old school. No, because he doesn't eat a grapefruit. I think Steve Harvey's like, nah, that's out of bounds. You can't be a man and eat a grapefruit. You know what I mean? Fellas, you know what I mean? I got some free citrus when I went to like a barter exchange thing on the weekend, and I had a big old grapefruit. And I was like, well, I'm not just going to eat raw dog this. I'm going to do something with it. So I tried to brulee it, which didn't really work, but it did come out nice. But yeah, that's all I had.
I guess as far as media goes, I didn't really listen to much music. I did start watching the new Sisu movie. Did y'all ever watch the first Sisu movie?
I haven't even heard of it.
No, I think it's not the kind of movie I'd watch.
Yeah, it's just an action-packed movie about this guy who, like, this is some really old, like, I think he's, like, an old war veteran or something like that, but it's, like, based in, like, Germany or Poland or something like that, and he's just, like, he's kind of like the John Wick of old guys, you know what I mean? But he's, it's just some crazy good action and fight scenes in it. But it's one of those movies to where like it happens every like 15 or 20 minutes. There's like a crazy cool, like creative death scene happens. And like the way he manipulates it is really cool. So I started watching the second one. I haven't finished it yet, but so far it's pretty good. I have a bad habit like that with movies to where I'll start it.
It was the type of movie where their audience is so... I don't know what the right word is. They had to say in the trailer for the movie that the dog doesn't die to make sure that people did not go because of that.
See, that's crazy because I wouldn't think the audience would care about that. Like,
They would. I think they were like, this is going to be a bunch of normie-ass white people who watch this and they're going to be sad if a dog dies. So we have to tell them ahead of time that it doesn't. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the death scenes in the first one were so brutal at some points where I was like, I don't think it's that kind of audience, but I guess that makes sense. I don't know. It is like, I don't know.
That was my impression of it when I saw it in the theater.
But yeah, like I would just like, I have a bad habit though of starting movies and not finishing them. And I don't know why I do it, but I think it's more of like, I'm not really watching any shows right now. So I'd rather watch movies in increments and pretend like it's a season. So I guess I'll be doing that with Sisu. And then yeah, no music, nothing like that. So yeah, I guess that's
you know, you should watch Kinds of Kindness.
Oh, have you not seen that, Phil? It's a fun one. Oh, but yeah, I see what Adrian's saying. You can watch it episodically.
It's three episodes.
Oh,
it's fun.
I watched The Woman King. I was surprised by how much I liked it. Oh, I don't know why I thought that was like a movie. In my mind, it's something about the advertising campaign made it seem like it was going to be like really CGI-y or something. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I thought it was going to have that same look that like the DC hero movies have where everything was dark. But no, it was a like pretty grounded movie. It was well done.
And care about the historical inaccuracies?
Oh, I did look that up because I was like, were they really anti-trade slave? And it's like, no, the heroes of the movie were selling slaves as much as the bad guys. Yeah. You know what? I think they had to give you a reason to root for them other than they had a cool all-woman army. Have you guys heard of this concept of like people will watch a period piece and be like, I don't believe those people could have existed back then. They have like iPhone face or whatever. Like,
Yeah.
I've never really felt that before, and I thought most of the actors were good, but you know, like John Boyega, he plays one of the guys in like the new Star Wars. He was the one character where I was like, that's a modern man. That's not like an old king.
Interesting.
From,
he's got iPhone face.
He's got iPhone face, I think.
Yes.
Like, I just didn't believe him as a king from the 19th century.
I've heard that about Margot Robbie because the cheekbones are just too like, no one's got cheekbones like that who's in Victorian England.
But yeah, it was a good movie. It's a fun watch. If you haven't seen it, it's I watched it on Peacock, I want to say. Wait, no, Hulu.
Oh, I guess I have one other thing that happened the past week. I just thought this was funny. Okay, so when that Charleston Comedy Club Wits End opened up like a few years ago, they like did this thing where they like passed comedians to where like...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
If they say like you're passed... Like at first it meant a lot of other things, but now I think it just means like they'll try to regularly book you for that season or that year or whatever. And they passed me like when they first opened, when I got a lot of shows there, and then they passed me again like a week or two ago or last week they did it. And when they did it this time, they announced it all on social media, like all the comics.
Yeah.
And they put a picture of me on there, and they just put the words "passed" on it. And multiple people reached
like
out to
died.
Me, and they were like, "We really thought you died. It just looked like you died." I'm like, "You really thought that?" Because they even put like the Wits End little like logo has like a little joker in it, or like a little like a jester holding a balloon. I'm like, "You think they said I died, and they still put the little jester with the balloon?" Be like, "He did." And then also, it was like, it was a carousel, so it was picturing me, then somebody else that got passed, and it was like, do you think they just double announced deaths?
In memoriam.
Yeah. But yeah, that made me laugh, because I saw that too, and I was like, this sounds, because not a lot of people know what passed means at a comedy club, not that it really means much.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, but made me laugh.
Oh, and then my other media roundup is, I don't want you to get too big ahead, Phil, but I've legitimately been listening to Type 5, the best compliment I can give a friend's piece of art, where I've been actually just walking around and choosing to put it on because I want to listen to it, not just listen to it at once. So
my head like, can't get no bigger.
So listen to Type 5 if you haven't out there, folks. It's good. It's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate somebody, my friend Colin, who lives in Charleston, he messaged me about one of the songs. He was like, this one is like my favorite song. And I was like, that's my least favorite song. So it is good to hear compliments on, to be like, oh, people actually find this digestible. So thank you. I really
which one's
it.
Your least favorite song?
The fifth one. I don't like that song that
really?
Much. And he was like, that one's the most catchy one.
That was
one
Pierce's
to me.
Favorite.
Really? That's crazy. Yeah, that's my least favorite one. I don't know. I found it like a little corny when I made it, but I was like, okay, people like it.
I think I like opener the most just because the ad libs crack me up so legitimately. Yeah. Like what that moment where you're like, oh,
I just scream. Yeah, that was the most fun one to record.
None taken.
That's the only one I recorded at Ty's house, and it's just like me and him in this big ass house. And he was like, "You need to go crazy on this one." And like, I love Uzi, the guy I record the rest of the songs with. But we're still not that close or anything, so I can't act too silly in the studio. But with Ty, I was just screaming. I was like, "Fuck you!" Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That was a fun one to record. Yeah.
And whoever, I think you talked about it with Adrian when you were talking about like the person who mastered it, but they did a good job making those ad libs sound like just that type of ad lib from a rap song. Like, I don't know what, I don't know, like they tone shifted it. I don't know what they did, but it was good.
I think
you gotta pan it a little bit.
They made it sound more distorted, I think is what it was, like in the background. So yeah. Ty is really good at, you know, he mixes and masters cheerleading songs, which you can get paid really good money for. When you mix like dubstep and like other electronic music for cheerleading squads. So yeah, he does that, and it's like that's hard to do. So shout out Ty. You want to get into the theme?
Yeah, this was, I think Christian floated it out at the end of the last episode of different types of rating systems, but I think we're doing like music review, book reviews, movie reviews, that kind of stuff, critics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will say, before I watch a movie,
not Yelp reviews, which I almost write in a column for. We're bringing this as like literally or a literary art culture review, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm cool with that.
All right.
So we're not talking Viennese actionist movement and all the art reviews. Okay.
Oh, we could.
I was going to bring that
up. I think that does fit.
Before I watch a movie, I usually always look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores. I don't take them that seriously, but I am just kind of curious. I guess I look more at the audience score than I do the tomato meter, but...
You're a man of the people.
I try to, yeah, because I know the critics of Rotten Tomatoes don't have a good rep. So I'm like, I guess I'll listen to the audience on this one. Like, but also, like, y'all know what kind of movies I like. You know, I like those dumb action movies. So if the audience liked it a lot, I'm like, okay, yeah, I will probably like this dumb action movie a lot too. But yeah, I do that. I never do that for music, though. If I like an artist, I'm just going to listen to the album no matter what. And then I'll like, you know, I'll form my own opinion around it. But I guess movie reviews, for some reason, do kind of like, I don't think they necessarily influence my opinion on a movie, but it is something I kind of take more serious than an album review.
What I will say about hip hop is that you don't need reviewers to tell you who to listen to, because you can just form your own like network of people to listen to by being like, who's featured on songs I like, and that's how you could find new artists. Whereas I feel like if you're listening to indie rock, like, I don't know, maybe you don't have to follow reviewers, but you better follow like some blogs or music publications, because otherwise you're never finding new bands, right? It's not like one I guess maybe like, well, if you're going to live shows, you can,
that's what I was
like,
gonna say, the version the of openers. That is the openers, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Some people follow labels. I mean, I know that, like, you know, if there's like an indie label who puts on a lot of good people, but that's not foolproof.
Yeah. Run for cover.
I get what you mean with that. And I guess like, yeah, I guess some people may use like reviewers, like maybe some people watch Fantana or Fantano. Is that his name?
It would be cool if he had a female version of Fantano.
I'm sure some people watch Fantano and they think like, oh, I heard he liked this album a lot, so I'm gonna give it a listen.
I don't think
I'll ever be that kind of music listener. I just kind of know who I like, and I'm not necessarily like stuck in my ways, I guess, with music. But also, it's like, for some reason, I can't take a movie, like a music reviewer's like opinion, that seriously. I'm gonna be like, I don't know what he thinks about other albums too, and it's like, I don't know. Like,
well, that's why you have to pick a reviewer and follow them so that you know their taste. That way, if they even say something's bad, but you know the reasons why they think that, you could still be like, I know how this person thinks. I think I would still like this. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I follow. The Dead End Hip Hop is good for that, because they have, like, you know, people with all sorts of different tastes, and you know what they each like, and they talk about more interesting things, and they go in depth, so
yeah.
I definitely follow them for that. Actually, I've been following them a lot less lately, so I can't even really say that, but
yeah, I'm guilty of doing the thing where I will check out a Fantana review, look at the description to see the score, and then just be like, all right, cool, I don't actually need to listen to him talk about this.
Fantano and Pitchfork will set the they'll set like the internet's opinion on an album, it's like, I just want to know if I hear people saying good or bad things, are they just copying their opinion? So it's like, if they both give something a low review, you know for sure everybody on Reddit's going to dislike that album, because it's like, everybody's, you know, I don't know, they set like the cultural like momentum for like, is this a cool thing to like or a not cool thing to like?
Yeah, yeah, I feel that. Do you think, how do y'all feel about artists, usually hip-hop artists, responding to famous critics or other like charts or like magazines?
That's always a bad move.
I think it's a bad move, too.
Yeah, it's always so sad.
Yeah, but I remember like back in the day when Eminem had like one of his biggest albums come out. I don't know if it was the Marshall Mathers LP or the Slim Shady LP, but The Source gave it like almost zero, like one microphone out of five or something like that, which was like, The Source was like the biggest thing for rap. I know it sounds so silly, but like that was like the biggest thing back then, to be like, oh, if you have five mics in The Source, then like you have like one of the best hip hop albums ever. And they gave him like one mic. And I think that whole thing started a beef between Eminem and one of the people who worked for The Source, who was a rapper named Benzino. And actually, Benzino's daughter, I don't know if y'all know this, is a Coi Leray. I don't know if y'all know that rapper, Coi Leray. But,
I didn't know that. I didn't know she was a Nepo baby.
Yep. I don't know. I found that kind of interesting. Like, I never, like, I don't think any other rap beef has been like that, to where the critic actually responds via rap, and it's really bad, but it was very entertaining to me.
Yeah, the way, not just artists, but the way fans, because obviously it's, like, very emotional for people, especially when you're younger and somebody's, like, your favorite artist and they get a bad review. The way fans react to a bad review is sometimes like, and you know, insane. And I do kind of, I mean, these people all make too much money for doing very little when you're like a music critic, but I do feel bad for them despite that sometimes, because it's like, come on, like they're allowed to dislike something. And if you like it, come on, that's got to be water off a duck's back. Becoming too salty about it makes the entire fan base and the artist look cornier. You can't obsess over it.
Right. Nah, it's cool to do that. I'm still upset about the six that he gave to Saba's record.
Do y'all ever feel the need to hold back your opinion if it's a really hot take on whether it's food, music, or movies, when everybody has like a generally positive review of it? You know what I mean?
No, I came in hot on Everything Everywhere All at Once. Pissed me off. Everybody liked it.
Yeah.
I was like, I've got to be the one. I've got to be the flame in the darkness against this film.
Yeah, I'll give a really muted opinion sometimes. I think when I wasn't really into Billie Eilish and she won all those Grammys, I was like, she's young. I'm sure she's going to make better music at some point. I don't really like what she's doing right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Adrian was just upset because she was talking about bad guys. He was like, I'm a nice guy. Why can't she talk about that?
I'm the nice guy.
I feel the need to do that when it comes to a local business who has like, everybody loves their food.
Mama Rabbit?
I defend Mama. No. But no, I don't know. I don't even want to say it now which business it is, because I feel like a hater because everybody loves it. And also, it's a local business and I don't want to tear a local business down by
having to make it. Come on, you gotta say it.
Is it a Korean place?
But now, why would you think I would tear down a Korean place?
I'm just trying to think of the place you might be talking about.
I'll say it. I don't know. It's like, here's the thing. I respect them. I respect what they're doing.
Justice Cafe. What also, is this preamble? What are we doing?
I just want to. Okay, I don't love Duke's Pad Thai that much.
Wow.
Here's the thing, though.
Oh, shit.
Here's the thing,
I wanted
though.
To hear it, but now that
Drake's
I've heard it, I wish
breaking.
I could unhear it.
Drake's little heart just split in two.
Here's the thing, though. I still get it pretty often because it's so close and convenient, but it's not like amazing. Everybody's like, this is incredible. And I'm like, every time I'm like, I'm not that impressed, it's good, but.
No, but here, I obviously have no idea what this place is, but that's what blows my mind about this. It's like people get so, maybe I'm upping myself a little too much here. When people dislike something I like, I find that interesting. I'm not, like, I don't get why people like.
It's
let
interesting
that,
how dumb you can be. That's what you usually
it's
say.
It's fucking. But like, I kind of like
that. Very peculiar how stupid you are.
I do like that friction, and I wish more people were like that. Like, I think that's a good friction to have. Yeah. I don't know.
But here's the thing. I don't even think it's bad Thai food. I think maybe I just don't love Thai food. I think that's really what it is. Ooh. It's not my thing. Yeah. But
I mean, even there, you're qualifying your words. You're not. You're saying maybe I don't love Thai
maybe
food. You're
just
worried
not for
of
me.
Saying
that's a good
I don't
way to
like
talk about
Thai
a review.
Food. You're like, I got to say I don't love it.
Yeah.
You're like qualifying it. It's just so funny how like worried we are about hurting people's feelings. I don't know.
Yeah, we talked about this on pod before about how people take it as a personal attack, which is a weird thing to do. I think I've upset some people recently because we'll be at places and they'll be like, are you going to get food? And I'll be like, no, the food here is so mid. And they'll be like, well, I was definitely going to get food, so now I feel bad about eating here. And it's like, oh, well, I don't know what to tell you.
You're like,
you know
what? The food here is for pigs.
I will say it's nice when you see the tide turn because it's like, I was hating Marvel movies for such a long time. And there was like a half decade there where people were like, you're an asshole, Paul. And then it went from you're an asshole, Paul, to like, oh, you're basically basic for saying Marvel movies are stupid. Like, it is nice mm-hmm. when you see that tide turn to your side.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, though. I also think Marvel movies are very... It's just, again, it's kind of like the Thai food thing. I usually just tell people, like, yeah, superhero movies aren't just... They just aren't for me. You know what I mean? I guess they're fine superhero movies, but I'm just not a superhero movie guy. I don't tell them the real thing, whereas, like, I think they're for babies.
Yeah, but it's like now most people would be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty basic. Most people saying superhero movies aren't that good. But there was like a good half decade there from like 2012 to 2017 where you were like an asshole ruining people's good times by being like, Iron Man 15 isn't that good.
Yeah. Whereas like, again, going back to like publications and stuff, being a horror movie fan, none of them get reviewed well. So you get pretty used to like the establishment that reviews these things doesn't like the thing that I like. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still watch Emma, right, on YouTube?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shout out to Emma. I forgot about her. Spooky Astronauts, I guess YMS. Can we get a shout out to him? Was supposed to be on the show.
YMS is a person kind of like you said, Adrian. I disagree with him more often than I agree with him, but I like how he reviews movies, and I know what he likes and what he... So it's like, I still like hearing him talk about the movies, and I understand that like it's not about me agreeing with him, it's that he'll like give me insight into it either way.
He dislikes
movies I like all the time. It doesn't make him any less of an interesting watch or worthwhile.
Someone who does get caught with the pretentious allegations, though, he had a whole thing about in his big review for the Oscars calling Sinners a normie classic, and apparently the people on his podcast got really upset about that. And
you see,
apparently
and
people
like
were still
Sinners,
coming out
but
about
I kind of see what he's saying.
Yeah,
like,
I kind of get what he's saying.
It's kind of Marvel movie-ified a little bit. Yeah. You know, there's like the way the comedy is interspersed with the... Yeah, there's like something
it's
about
Marvel-fied,
it. Marvel-fied,
you know? Elevated horror, yeah. I can't think... Is there anyone else who's a reviewer that I watch online? I guess NetShack reviews some stuff, but... Yeah, this Emma, YMS, and that's about it, I think. I don't know who else are my go-tos, yeah.
Do you watch any food reviewers?
I watch a lot of food content creators, but yeah. But not a lot of, like, just people who review things.
I guess NetShack reviews on his podcast, he reviews, like, food releases, and if that's, like...
Yeah.
I don't follow any reviewers, really. I mean, I'll see stuff on, like social
media. Oh, Johnny Tuchellos, I'll give him a shout-out, too. Drake mentioned him in his episode. Johnny Tuchellos, he does animation, usually adult animation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't really follow reviewers like that. I guess I just kind of, like, if something looks interesting to me, like, to where I want to listen to it or watch it, I just kind of do it, and then, I don't know, I don't think about it too much, but I guess sometimes when people are like, oh, this movie got a perfect 100%, like, on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm like, okay, I kind of want to watch it now, but I never seek out, like, oh, I go on Rotten Tomatoes and be like, what's, like, 100% right now? What do I need to watch? It's just, if I see it, I'll do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But usually that makes headlines, you know, on social media or just, like, I guess, entertainment news when it's, like, Sinners has, the first day out or whatever like that, it has a 100%.
Freestyle.
First day out freestyle, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. 100%
on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Adrian, I think you mentioned all the people I follow, which is YMS for movies and then Dead End Hip Hop for like music.
Yeah, I need to listen to more new music, but a lot of what I get through is just backlog. Like, I have things I've been meaning to listen to forever, so I don't really need someone to tell me what I need to listen to. I was talking to this bartender in Davis, who she knows that I like the same music as her, so she'll talk to me about music all the time. And she's like, oh, did you hear that blah 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 is going on tour with blue blue blue? And I was like, I'm not gonna lie to you, I don't know who those are. I'm old, I don't listen to new music. And she was like, are you secretly old? And I was like, brother, I'm just regular old. I don't know what to tell you.
But you've got such a boyish charm.
I'm sorry, I don't know Michael Sarah Palin. I did have one of their songs liked on Spotify, so apparently I did know who they were. So I think, yeah, that's my thing. I kind of feel the same way about movies too, where I have a backlog, but I do still watch a few people who review them. And then restaurants in town, there's like a few local guides that I follow, but like a lot of it is, word of mouth from friends. I'll trust my friends. Some of them.
Oh, I guess we can talk about the best of Columbia stuff. Like, does that ever make you want to try?
That's another episode, but we can do it.
Okay. But yeah, well, I guess like, yeah, you want to talk about another episode then?
Talk about it. Talk about it. Say what you got to say, King.
Say what I got to say. Sometimes it does make me want to go try a place when I'm like, oh, this place, a business or whatever, this one like best Indian food or whatever. Like, yeah, let me go try that out. I've been meaning to try Indian food recently. I guess if they got the best one, then... Yeah, the newspaper.
It's made me want to try that Tombow Grill place in Forest Acres for years now. They always win a bunch of shit.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I've never heard anybody say anything good about that place, though.
It used to be right across from Trader Joe's, and no one ever talked about it, but the best ofs loved them.
I guess so. But
yeah, well, it's owned by John Freetimes, so maybe that should give you a clue. How do you guys feel about, like... Because I do sometimes when I'm like looking for like two or three places within a block of where I am, you know, if I'm out and about in town and I'm like, I want to eat somewhere near here, I'll pick the place that's like the highest rated on the block on Google reviews. But then it's like places are gamifying that so much at this point.
Like, I was, like your Uber rating.
Yeah, I was in London.
It only really matters if it's below a four. Then you're like, what the fuck's happening over there?
Yeah.
I was in London and the server was like, I'm like, I have like 40 reviews this week. If I get to 50 or this month, if I get to 50 in a month, I get a $500 bonus. So do you guys mind like mentioning me in a Google review? And I did it because the guy was nice. And this place definitely has close to a 5 stars because they've like implemented this system where you feel guilted by your waiter who's been pretty nice into being like, man, that's pretty good cash for you. I don't want you to lose out on that. Sure, I'll give you the review. Yeah.
That place is working as like a game room, whatever, it's, like an escape room, where every time you have to tell them to mention your name.
Yeah, every single time they do that.
I get a $10 bonus if you mention my name. I need the $10.
They won't let me escape if I don't do it. Oh, man. Yeah, that's exactly how all escape rooms... Every time I've done an escape room, I think every time the master is like... Is that the game master?
The master.
Is that what they're called? That sounded kind of weird. The dominatrix.
The escape room daddy.
The puppy.
If anyone listening hasn't left a review in the podcast yet, feel free to leave a 5-star review. We did get knocked down finally, but hey, we could, you know, want to help bring us back up.
We got knocked down from a perfect 5-star because I got in an argument with people on Blue Sky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was me. Yeah, I give y'all 1 star after that. Okay, whatever you do, do not post my mixtape on Blue Sky. I cannot afford any battery. I have no reviews right now. I don't want to keep it that way. Oh, wait. Can I mention that real quick? Can I mention how we finagled a number one spot just by I got y'all two to buy the album? And then, like
and Drake. I think Drake bought it before I did.
Drake bought it?
I tried to get Isabel to buy it. I don't know if she did.
At most, with the people that I texted, I don't even know if everybody bought it or not. At most, 10 people bought it, and that's all you need to get a number one spot for like a day. And then I checked like 2 days later, and I was like 196. So like, but if you want that number one spot and get the screenshot,
yeah, I did check a few days later, and you were
to that.
You were beneath the chart from Fart Sounds compilation album was I think 192 on the charts.
I listened to that album. That was a really good album.
Now, how often are you guys book shopping and judging them by their covers?
Often.
It's kind of hard to judge a pop-up book by its cover.
Is that an old joke?
I just came up with that off the top, baby. How we doing tonight?
Okay. All right. Hey. That's a new one.
That's a new one, baby.
Do you ever listen to Christian's Instagram ABC ratings of movies?
I read all of them. Sometimes
I think that's what he was
videos.
Saying at the end of the last pod, was that he thinks that that grading scale makes more sense than a 10-point scale.
I don't know. I don't think they make too much of a difference to me. I was just like, I think I can get
a good
grasp
of what I think.
That's just
a 5-star scale, A, B, C, D, F.
But he does do the pluses. But I guess you can do like 4.2 out of 5. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make too much of a difference to me. I usually just convert it to whatever grade I want it to be. So except for if it's like 4 out of 5 stars, I had to think about it like 4 out of 5 cookies.
Five mics.
Five mics in the source, yeah.
Yeah, what did the source give the 3-mic special by Neil Brennan?
That's good.
All right, so this is Welcome to Asking for a Friend, a new music advice column where arts administrators Rachel Sokolow and Carol Ann Chung address questions about working as a composer or with composers. So, here we go. Doing the second question? Dear Rachel and Carol Ann, I'm an indie record producer slash label working with three groups of older, professionally established, yet indie artists, Reed over 60, making records of truly fantastic new music that doesn't easily fit into either classical or jazz genres. These artists are fantastic performers, yet unaware of how to self-promote, especially in the contemporary landscape of social media. Do you have any advice for older artists about A, how to develop greater comfort and facility promoting themselves via social media, B, how to find experienced publicists who can help us promote niche genre recordings to the audiences that seek it, and C, if we are self-promoting, how far in advance of a release date should we be seeking press? Many thanks for any advice you can offer. So this one's more about promotion, but one of the ways that people promote is reviewing music. So, yeah, there you go.
This led me to something I was going to ask Phil, and then I forgot to halfway through the intro. Did you think of emailing, like, blogs and reviewers your album? Because if you email, like, smaller blogs and artists who review music, like, you'll probably get some hits with people who will listen to it and talk about it.
Yeah, I really didn't think about that. I think I may have talked about this on the or not this, but what I'm about to say on the interview episode I did with Adrian, which is like something about like rolling out the album I just put out. It just didn't seem right for me, or maybe I wasn't just in the right headspace for it. And I was like, I really just want to put out this album and then see if people like it. And like whoever does see it sees it, and whoever doesn't really affect me. But I think with like my next project I'm putting out, I want to do something like that. Like, I really want to try to roll it out and get like some type of buzz around it. But yeah, that's a good idea though, to reach out to like small blogs or anything really.
I mean, those small blogs too, like the people who read those will actually listen to an artist they've never heard of before if like the person who they follow likes it. But yeah, I mean, I guess it is all luck. And yeah, I mean, probably a pretty low hit rate on blind emails, so it would be beneficial to actually know those people if you met them somewhere while touring or something.
Are they like all on Substack now? Where are people blogging from now?
Isabel follows blogs. I think, yeah, some of them are Substack. Some of them have their personal blog sites. She follows like indie rock ones, but she's very convinced that it's like, oh, all the old review sites are dead. We're back to blogs. That's the only good place to find music.
Maybe I should still do that, though. I don't know. Now that it's out, maybe I'll hit up a few blogs and be like, hey, do you want to review my album, I guess? Maybe I'll do, like, indie rap. Maybe if that's the thing, like, indie rap or indie hip-hop. I think that'll probably get, like, the best results. Because, yeah, even...
You just send it to Drewski.
People who like independent rap would like your album, even though it's, like, a little more comedy-oriented.
Yeah, I hope so. But, like, also, the comedy rap subreddit... on Reddit is like so dead. It's crazy. Like, you would think maybe they would even post like Lonely Island stuff every now and then and be like, oh, in this day Lonely Island released this, or like maybe some Flight of the Conchords stuff. But like, oh, it's not even comedy rap.
I forgot about Flight of the Conchords.
It's musical comedy. That's what it is. There's like one on Reddit called musical comedy, and it's so dead. And I was like, there has to be another big one, right? But like, no, like not at all. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a dying genre. I one of their questions was asking about promoting, like, how to develop greater comfort and facility promoting themselves via social media. I would say that is really hard to put yourself out there, but they did say, like, these people are, like, around the age of 60, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like at that point, you don't got much to lose, right? You know what I mean? Like, you just gotta put
some... You got barely any life left to live. Who cares?
You gotta get famous by doing one of those charming old person does a young person thing.
Oh, yeah.
The TikTok channels first. You gotta be like, grandma who rides a skateboard, or grandma who plays Fortnite. And that'll get you a lot of easy views, and then you pull out your, oh, I make jazz music.
But what if they have, like, the conflicting, like, they're just like, oh, I don't want to, like, sell out and be, like, a gimmick and be like, oh, grandpa is doing...
Shut up, old man. You got to sell out.
You got to do it, old man.
That didn't work for you the first 60 years of life.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You got to do surprising that grandpa knows what the word chopped means, and he says it a lot. new music is chopped. You kids gotta listen to this bass jazz.
Have y'all ever thought about like promoting the pod on social media with like reels or TikToks of like audio from the podcast, maybe like a funny part?
We have a YouTube channel.
Oh yeah, y'all do have a YouTube channel, yeah.
Which we never post on. Adrian, I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like we have the energy of 60-year-olds with our intermittent and like dipping our toes in the pool approach to what social media we use and using it very sparingly or in like odd ways.
Well, Phil offered to make us an Instagram a long time ago, but we never took him up on the offer.
Yeah, that felt like
so. That's one way to find a way to get a publicist is ask a friend to do it.
So yeah, I don't know. I think some people just get social media and they don't even think about the like putting yourself out there that much, which I think that's my biggest problem. I think about putting myself out there way too much to where I just kind of like, I do the same thing. I kind of just dip my toes in it and I never really like fully commit. But if you don't have that fear, then you could probably make it way easier.
Yeah, if you're shameless.
Yeah.
I think it's a big part for me. Also, I just get really icked out by the trying to game the system type thing. Like, I think I mentioned this once where during a professional development class, one of my friends took, he was telling me about what he learned, and he was like, yeah, at a party or a networking thing, you're never supposed to go into an even numbered group because then you as an odd person split it up. And I was like, I don't want to go around life thinking like this. And so like the idea of like, I know that when a music producer that I like was trying to figure out how to game the TikTok algorithm, he had someone on to explain stuff to him. And he was like, yeah, if a post that doesn't do well, take it off, do it again. It might just repost it. It might catch on better the second time for the algorithm. And I was like, I don't want to have to think about life like this. Like, this just disgusts me.
Yeah, that is a big thing.
I don't know why.
I agree. It's not even like, that sounds like you have too much pride. I guess it is a pride thing, but like, that's almost a noble way to put it. I feel self-humiliated doing it. You know, I feel like, it's almost like it makes me feel like such a snivelly little worm that I'm like, I just kind of peace out too quickly.
I'm sorry, FD Signifier, I love ya. The title thing, the changing the thumbnail of his videos, which he always says he's going to do because it works, is like, I don't care. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to do it. I couldn't be a grown man changing the thumbnail of my YouTube video to try and get more numbers on it.
Doing the Zeth face and pointing at something.
Yeah. And he'll defend it till he dies, but I can't rock with that.
Yeah. That just reminds me of those podcast clips we see on Instagram. It's like, is it appropriate for a grown man to sit in traffic? It is that stupid questions like that. And it'd be like, is it appropriate for a grown man to change the thumbnails?
I'm on the wrong side. I'll tell you
what. Oh my gosh. There's like respected like artists who, I don't know what it is. It's like something about getting, maybe this is becoming like an old man social media rant, but like there's people who have been like in popular bands who their entire Twitter presence is like showing up and being like, name a song that's overrated, because like asking a question gets a lot of engagement and will make. Yeah. And it's like, my man, you were in a popular band in the 90s and you post this 5 times a day every day on Twitter. Like, how do you not feel like sad and desperate for this attention?
I'm looking at one of my friend's Facebook pages right
What's
now.
What's a song that when it comes on will get everybody on the dance floor?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for this because a lot of comedians do this to get engagement on Facebook.
They'll
post like the dumbest statuses to where it's like, I know you don't believe that and you're posting this for engagement and this is like not respectable at all. But like, I'm trying to find some right now from this one guy. I don't want to say his name, but it's like, if I told you what his stage name was, you'd be like, yeah, I could see how he's like a sellout. I couldn't really find any examples on that guy's page, but he'll post stuff like, what's the most desperate thing y'all have done on a first date? Or like, what's the most craziest thing you said on a first date? Or like, what's the biggest red flag you ever seen in a relationship? And then it was just like
easy material.
Like hundreds of comments. And it was like, yeah, I don't know if he's trying to like fish for material or he's just trying to get engagement.
No,
but either way,
that's straight up engagement bait, because a lot of people will comment on that and they'll make it spread and they'll just get more eyes on your page. I mean, it's so obvious on Twitter. Any question that's just like oriented to getting like everybody to leave a reply is just, yeah.
Question for the culture.
For the culture. Okay, well, let me look at the other questions they were asking.
Oh yeah, more about promotion. How far in advance to release do you press?
Oh yeah. Okay, so these older people, how to get people interested in jazz, how to
I don't know. It is interesting, like thinking about a rollout for an indie artist where you want to like, you don't want to cross the line of being pretentious, yet you want to get like some engagement for the album, you know.
Oh, yeah, you gotta, what are they called? You gotta release an ARG where it's a cryptic website and your fans have to decode what the release date is and they get to listen to a snippet.
Sleep Token was the last band to do that, yeah.
I think, like, for my next album, I want to go on the radio and freestyle, but I'm just trying to think of a bit to do I could do up there, except for just a regular freestyle. Andy Samberg kind of did a really good one for Popstar where he said he was freestyling and he kept on saying, like, he kept on mentioning stuff that was in the room that wasn't there. And so it was obviously pre-written. And he was like, big boy over there with the big pink shirt. And big boy's like, I'm not wearing a pink shirt. And Andy's there was like, man, it smells like dick in here. He was like,
you got rats in here.
You got a lot of rats in here. Big boy, you crazy. oh, yeah, that was really funny. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I would do, but I feel like that's like a, such a good twist to a radio freestyle. You know what I mean? Where it's obviously written.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I would do. But I think that would be a funny way to promote like a rap album is to go on the radio and freestyle and somehow make it a bit.
What's that famous The Game freestyle he always does during it?
Red
starts
Rose,
like,
White Ceiling.
Red Roses, White Ceiling.
Did y'all see the... Oh man, I maybe I did mention this on the last pod. His pickup line he was trying to do with DMs.
That sounds familiar.
So he would send women DMs on Instagram, and he would just message like B, like the letter B, and then 4, and then they'll be like, "What?" And he was like, "Oh, I thought this was a vending machine because I wanted a snack or something like that. Like, you a snack? I thought this was a vending machine."
Oh, and then, damn!
So like multiple women came out with the same screenshot. Like he just did it on all these women, and then his response was so funny. He was like, "Damn, I guess I gotta do B5 now." Oh, that's so. But everybody was commenting under it like "Red Rose, White Ceiling" because he just does that too.
That's awesome. This man just has like he's like one of those monkeys you like spin on the back and they clap. Like he just has the same phrase he says over and over for every situation. Okay, so my advice for these people is like, I don't think jazz is ever going to become massive, but yes, I think like with how fractal our culture has gotten that even they could find a popular little niche on TikTok as like old heads making classical or jazz. Like,
well,
they should
be
on there.
Slow down and reverb it.
Yeah. Like, they could find success. People might find it charming that it's old people on social media. They might find it just without even that gimmick. They might just generally like it. Like, I mean, that's a good thing about social media. There's an audience out there for everything.
Might get sampled and remixed in a song.
There was a guy on Instagram. I was trying to find him. He played piano at like a assisted living facility, like for old folks, and he would do covers of rap songs but on the piano, and like he would just caption the videos like playing Mini Men by 50 Cent to these old people, and they have no idea what this song is because I'm making it like a jazz version. And like when you listen to the lyrics, it's like, yeah, I guess this isn't like necessarily a violent song if you just leave some words out. Like,
all right, I'm gonna read
many
this answer.
Men wish death upon me.
All right. Hey, LGS. Trust me, it's not just older folks who struggle with navigating digital spaces. Promoting an album today means proactively finding your listeners on multiple platforms. Radio, YouTube, digital streaming platforms, social media, live shows, you name it. Yes, the number of different platforms in the digital sphere can be overwhelming, but it's also an opportunity for artists who don't fit into neat, predefined genre boxes to find niche audiences. The great news for these artists is that they are already working with a label who can ensure recorded assets are fed to all the streaming platforms with the proper metadata. If you're sending a press release out yourself, I'd say to plan around 6 to 8 weeks before the album release date, but this can also depend on what time of year you're releasing. If there are events tied to the release, if you're trying to hit holiday gift lists, make an electronic press kit to share with the press and music platform contacts that include the album information artwork, audio files, and artist bios and headshots. This can be as simple as creating a password-protected folder in Dropbox or Google Drive and including the link in your press release. Having a publicist on your team can be a big help in navigating a release plan, getting better placement on music platforms, and securing interviews and reviews. Many publicists today also advise or even handle social media for clients, or can recommend someone who can help your artist with creating posts. How to find the right publicist? Well, it's often a process of researching, gathering info from peers, and reaching out to many potential collaborators before you find the right fit. I sometimes advise artists to look at other artists making relatively similar music to see who they're working with, or just Google classical music publicist and start reaching out to folks to introduce yourself, set up a meeting, and see if it's a good fit. Oftentimes, publicists can recommend names of other colleagues even if they're unable to take you on for whatever reason. On the topic of social media, one great thing about the world of social media is that there's enough room for all types of folks, ages, and background. A few tips for figuring out what and where to begin posting. Again, do some research. Check out what labels and artists who you admire are doing on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, etc. What kind of posts, artwork, and videos are they creating, and where are they posting them? 2. Start with one channel. If social media feels too vast and complicated, narrow your scope to one channel that feels manageable or fits your personal style more. Many artists I work with primarily focus on one channel, say Twitter or Instagram, that most suits their manner of expression. Get comfortable in one space, and then down the road, you can adapt your posts across the platforms. Ask yourself, what makes your group you? And then show us. Use this question as a guiding principle for what kind of content you can share to help audiences understand who you are, what kind of music you play, and what makes it so special. Today, visual content, i.e. videos and photos of you performing or talking about music, is key to engaging potential fans on social media. Just keep it short and sweet. You can capture a lot with a cell phone, a tripod, and good lighting these days, or find a younger person who's willing to help. But one thing that I've found that never fails is content, performers just having a really joyful time playing music together. Best of luck, Carol Ann. I came up with the answer while I was reading it. You gotta post a cover of Grandma Got Hit by a Bazooka.
From South Park?
No, for the song that came out. I don't know when it came out, but it's gained popularity in recent months.
Yeah,
Rest in peace, my granny. She got hit by a bazooka.
And all they did was just post like a screen recording of the SoundCloud song playing, like with the cover art. It was like an AI picture of their grandma, I think, getting like with angel wings. Yeah.
And I've seen like Midwest emo covers of it. I've seen like Weezer like style covers of it. I've seen a bunch of different people try and cover it in different ways.
I do like what they said, where they're like, you can capture a lot with just a tripod and a camera. I think that's very important too for like. I mean, I don't know. I'm not one to speak because I've never had a video like blow up or anything like that. But like, I've seen a lot of videos blow up on like
you levitating didn't blow up.
That has more views than anything I ever put out in my life. But I've seen a lot of Instagram videos, TikTok videos blow up with like no like nice cameras or not even tripod sometimes. And it's really just like the content over everything. So yeah, I like what they said. It was like you can get a lot. Just have fun with it. And if it's like people like you, then they'll your video may get a lot of traction.
Are there classical music bands on Instagram putting up videos? I guess it is true. I mean, everybody must be doing this, but it is interesting to think that I don't get those on my feed. I wonder why.
I don't know. I don't know anybody that does like classical music, really, that at least that posts on Instagram.
All right, Paul, you ready for your question?
Yeah, let's do it. So I brought in Lit Hub's advice column. This isn't one we've done before. I don't know if it has a title, but I'll just jump right into it. This is Kristen Arnett from April 4th, 2024. For Adrian and Phil, it's the second question, or is it the third question? Yeah, third question.
Third question.
I'm mildly obsessed with finding bad reviews of the work of a writer who is very acclaimed, but I don't like at all. Am I broken? I brought this in because not because I'm that big a hater for like any specific creator. I'm
anybody can get it.
That big a hater for specific things I don't like. So, like, everybody loved Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I didn't. I was scouring the internet for people who agreed with me that it was shit, and that was hard to find for a while there. Yeah.
You're ahead of your time.
But, yeah, sometimes when I don't like something and it's universally critically acclaimed, I do get this. Like, I will be like, who are some other people who agree with me? I mean, the whole point of looking for reviews sometimes is to, like, kind of flesh out your own opinion. Because it's like, okay, who agrees with me and why do they like or dislike what I like or dislike? So I get this. When you really hate something or even when you really love it. Like, when To Pimp a Butterfly came out, I remember I loved it so much. But I also was reading a lot of reviews of it because I was like, what do people have to say about this album? I'm just so interested in, like, other people's positive reviews just to kind of understand it more.
Oh, I can't believe I didn't mention this, that when I watch a movie, I'm almost always that night going on to Reddit and typing in that movie and seeing what the reviews are on Reddit.
Mm.
That's one of my big, not review sources, more like a post, like, let me think through my thoughts from hearing what other people had to say about it.
I think it's like usually when I think that there's secret depths to something that I'm more interested in doing that. But yeah, I get that.
I get what you mean. Yeah, like, there has been, like, some albums or movies that I really like, and I don't really know how to, like, put it in words why I like it so much. Or the other way around, when I really don't like something, and I'm like, what is it about this movie that I don't like? Like, I have some thoughts about it, but I'm like, if I do read a review, I'm like, oh, yeah, that is kind of what I was thinking. That kind of summarizes my thoughts a good bit, you know?
When I need a hater, I go to Paul. I'm like, Paul, you also didn't like that Bo Burnham special, right? I need someone who agrees with me.
Which one?
And
inside,
it does feel validating.
Was that the one?
Inside, yeah. I thought was overrated. Ugh. And it is nice when you hear things like the Hive Mind boys are really anti-Bo Burnham, and so I like whenever they just go on their rants about it, and I'm like, hell yeah, someone's showing some solidarity with me.
Okay, so, like, I'm not, like, a big fan of, like, Playboi Carti, nor Yeat. And I feel like those are like the two biggest rappers out right now for like the younger generation. Like they're huge. Like, and yeah, I never really understood the hype, and because I never liked the music, but also I didn't want to just be a hater and be like, this music sucks. It doesn't sound good. I kind of wanted to hear other people's like negative opinions and be like, what's a logical way to say that this is not my cup of tea without being disrespectful in a way. You know what I mean?
Like, usually what I do is I say, they just talk about sex, money, and drugs. No, thank you.
I think that's a tough one though, because like, I mean, I don't hate Playboi Carti, but I never really got into him either. Like it just didn't hit me how it did for a lot of other people. Yeah. But that's a tough one because a lot of the haters, it's like more interesting when it's smart media, because you know what I'm saying? Like Playboi Carti, you're just going to run into like a lot of like Reddit heads who are like, what is this mumble rap? And it's like, well, I like some things that are considered mumble rap, so just like kind of like reactionary haters who are just like, this is bullshit because it's not lyrical. It's like, okay, well, that's not an interesting or thought out reason,
because I like a lot of music that's not lyrical at all. Like a lot of rappers aren't lyrical at all, but like it's just like the actual like the sound of it, like what, like it's just not my thing, you know. But it's
did you find a lot of people with interesting reasons? I've never looked into Playboi Carti's.
Not really, actually. Like it was a lot of people, like you said, a lot of people were just like, "What is this mumble rap trash?" And it's like, I like mumble rap, but I just don't like this for some reason. Why don't I like this music? Like, I tell Adrian all the time, Rilo Rodriguez is like one of my favorite rappers right now, and a lot of people classify him as mumble rap. But I think the reason I like him though is because he has a lot of bars, but you just can't understand what he's saying unless you listen to him enough to where you get to start to understand what he's saying. It's like, oh, what he's saying is pretty crazy, but he's just like, he's doing it in the style of like a mumble rapper, and it's like, it's such a unique sound to me. But
well, I feel like in 2015 and 2016, Young Thug and Future were both making like what was considered very similar music. And like Young Thug, I would listen to and I'd be like, this is incredible. This is changing my life. I don't know how a man could come up with this.
Pussy boy, I leave you dead in college.
It's so beautiful to me. And then I would listen to like the person he was compared to the most, Future, and I'd be like, nah, I don't get it at all.
I don't get that either. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would be impossible to find a reviewer who, you know, disliked one and not the other and figure out what the difference was, you know. Like it was just like,
I mean, Phil,
there's some inexplicable reason that separates them that I could never really like discern.
I don't want any smoke with Future, Adrian. I don't want to bring that up.
Hey,
I don't want to relive
you,
up the beat.
You do or don't like Future, Phil?
Actually, Future really did grow on me, I'm not gonna lie. But yeah,
but he did rap in a song. He said, I'm not gonna stop rapping until,
hey, Adrian, we know the lyric,
history.
We're good. hey, encyclopedia of all my lyrics. You close it now.
Lil Uzi Vert was always a little confusing to me. That was kind of like a Playboi Carti where he was so big for a while, and I was like, it just doesn't hit me the same way it hits other people.
But his hits, like his radio hits, I liked them a lot. Like the EXO Tour Life song and the one he had with Nicki Minaj, those are both really catchy songs to me. I was like, I get it. And then also, I think that was one of the first rappers that I listened to one of those studio sessions by when they were doing the, there's like a studio process that a lot of like, I guess maybe SoundCloud rappers kind of made popular when they were calling it like cutting in, where they would just not really write anything. They would just go in the studio and just kind of freestyle and just keep on doing that over and over again and be like, leave that part, take that part out, or put that part right here. And there was like an hour or 2 hour long video of Lil Uzi Vert making EXO Tour Life. And it's so, I watched the whole thing. It was so interesting. I'm like, well, I don't think I will ever be that artistically talented to like make a song like that in the moment, except for writing a song and then going to the studio knowing exactly how it's supposed to sound like. But yeah, I don't know. It's so that I think that made me respect Lil Uzi Vert in a different light. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I see the vision, you know. I don't think I could ever do that.
Everything that showed up on Lyrical Lemonade, I liked. That guy was really good at picking good songs from even artists who like I didn't usually like. He would pick like their single that was like far and above the best.
He did the What's Poppin' video for Jack Harlow. That was a fun little video.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's the one who got Jack Harlow? God damn.
Yeah.
He did Godzilla with Eminem, too. He discovered Eminem, no big deal.
He's the one who did MGK's cover. No, cover, not cover. his own song, but over the beat from Seven Nation Army, he did Diablo.
Oh.
But, okay, back to when we're haters. What are some other things that y'all have been contrarian haters on? Anything? Adrian, this doesn't hit you. You've never been like...
I just talked about Bo Burnham.
Bo Burnham. That's true. That's true.
There's some stand-up videos that I see online where I'm like, this wasn't that funny to me. Let me look into the comments and see if there's any other haters in here that also don't like this guy. And I will find some people be like, oh, okay, are we just doing anti-humor now? And I'm like, all right, that's not exactly what I was thinking, but I'll take it.
Yeah. It's hard to find sometimes people who know exactly what you don't like about it. I didn't look into it anymore after I went to the concert, but when I went to go see Passion Pit with Dora Lee, I really was like, I am stunned by how much this doesn't move me in any way. But I think I didn't need to break that down. I was just like, I don't think this is music for me.
Oh yeah, I went with some friends that were like, Isabel wanted to see an opener, and some of her friends were really into this band. I guess her more normie friends, just to not put Isabel on blast, were into this band Hippocampus. And after watching them live, I was like, I need to go online and find haters. This is
was Foxygen opening for them? Who was
it? Was like this three person like Japanese like girl band. They were good. They Trico? Were fun. But yeah, man, Hippocampus. After watching them live, I was like, these lyrics are so corny.
I think like, but with them saying I'm mildly obsessed with finding bad reviews, I would never say like I'm obsessed with it, but it's usually like, okay, if I see like it's usually just the first time I hear somebody, kind of like you said with it, like Hippocampus is like, oh, my initial thought is I don't like them. Let me see what other people think though too, and maybe like it's more of like a reality check to be like, am I just a hater right now, or is this opinion I have valid? But if it's like you follow somebody on social media that you like don't like you hate following them, and then you're just like looking for like haters because of that, and like you just keep on getting validated, I think that's a sign that you may be broken, and that's maybe not a good thing to do. But but to clarify on that, I do hate follow some people, but not to look at negative comments just because I'm so interested with the stupid shit they're saying online, i.e. my brother. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's more like, oh.
Is it time for a roundup of one of your brother's Facebook posts?
I got to subscribe to the Mandus. Yeah, we could pull up one of his posts right now. Why not?
Is there anything new?
Yeah. I don't know.
Or a good old.
I think he's calmed down on social media because a lot of people have proved him wrong in, like, literally every fucking thing he said. But let's see.
He's just been getting more wrong in more basic ways. He's just like 2 + 3 is like 6 or something.
I was thinking like math. Oh man, now he's just sharing a lot of reels. Yeah, I think he's broken. Ooh. I think he's broken now.
That's an easy way for a dumb person to get away with bad opinions, because it's like, let me just put it off on somebody else to have that opinion.
Right, that guy says. Thoughts?
Okay, I'll read y'all the very last one he posted, but this is from a while ago, because, he has definitely calmed down on the post. This is from January 29th, so a few months ago.
Ooh.
All he said, and no comments under this one, I think people were done arguing with him at this point. He says, how about Minnesota stops being a sanctuary state? If the state politics in Minnesota wanted to, they could stop all this chaos. Federal resources and federal money should stop going to these states.
You know what's funny about that? Minnesota won. Those protesters got ICE out of their city. The Trump administration had to back off. So how about they keep doing what they're doing and ICE fucks off?
Hold on. Do you want to see the stats on this, though? 7 likes, 1 heart reaction.
Oh, damn.
But yeah, okay, I guess going back to the question, though, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think if you do it, like, just once, just to have a reality check to be like, am I a hater if what I'm thinking is logical, and you're not, like seeking out to, like, tear down somebody, then that's nothing. That's just, like, you know, being real with yourself to be like, I don't want to be illogical and not liking something. I just want to make sure, like, I'm cool, but, like...
Yeah... This one seems more like
I
write
think
books.
There's anybody who I follow just to dislike,
read hating comments. Like, that's insane behavior. I would never do that.
This one seems like I'm trying to be a writer. That's why I subscribe to this newsletter or whatever. I should be famous. This one has more of a direct like, I should be famous. They shouldn't. And so I'm looking it up to people who hate Stephen King or whoever this person is.
Oh yeah.
Because it makes me feel better. I think that's more of the psychology of this question, which I've never really done that.
At a lot of comedy open mics, if I know a comedian's about to go up and they're like dog shit at comedy, and they're like also like conservative, I will stay in the room to watch them bomb. I do really enjoy that. So maybe what I said is kind of hypocritical, but I really do like watching somebody like slowly like die on stage if they're conservative and they're really bad at comedy. But that's just more political.
How often are people being really political like at Art Bar or Columbia?
There's like two or three people specifically that every time they come out, I'm like, oh, I'm staying for your set because I know you're going to die up there. Like, yeah.
Is it just like they're just big Joe Rogan fans and they're like, comedy is about politics?
They don't come out that often because they know, like, they've learned that that's not what the crowd is at Art Bar, but every now and then they're like, maybe this week will be different. Maybe.
Is there like an alternative comedy spot that is like that?
Rootin' Tootin' Joe's Comedy Shack.
No. I mean, like, the joints, maybe when they were doing open mics, maybe they got that, like, they harnessed that kind of crowd.
The Jazz Club?
Like, kind of, because a lot of older people would go there. Like older white guys would go there. So, like, I think sometimes when I was in that room, I was like, yeah, this crowd seems like a little right-leaning. But Art Bar has always been more, like, left-leaning. Like, there's never been, like, conservatives really, like, heavily in Art Bar, especially an open mic night.
I think Drake would have been a good person to bring in for this question, because I think we talked about on his episode him liking videos where people dunk on right-wingers. So that kind of feels like this kind of energy, where actually, like, you're putting effort into, I want to watch somebody dunk on somebody else. And he also mentioned critically hated metal person Ronnie Radke, who's another person that people just, like watching the arc of his downfall, and people like being a part of that.
All right, let's read LitHub's answer. I love that this isn't a question of asshole behavior, but rather a question of whether you've stopped functioning properly. It's like you're a robot whose circuits have suddenly started sparking and smoking, an android on the cusp of catastrophic system failure. Friend, you're not broken. You're not a robot, unless you are a robot. If that's the case, then we've got a whole different set of problems to deal with here. What are you? What you are is a human being. You haven't mentioned whether the writer in question is an asshole, so I'll have to assume they're perfectly fine. When someone is a jerk, it opens the floodgates of freedom, a feeling that is akin to absolving our sins when it comes to enjoying bad literary coverage of another writer. In this case, it sounds like they're just a random author who for some reason really gets under your skin. That's normal. It happens. It doesn't mean you're broken. I think it might mean, however, that you need to consider why you're looking up these bad reviews. Odds are that it actually has very little to do with the author in question and more to do with how you're currently feeling about yourself. The publishing world sets us up to feel as though we are constantly in competition with one another. When someone gets a book deal or residency or an award or a grant, it can occasionally make it feel like there's not enough good to go around. If you're at a point right now where you feel stagnant or like things aren't happening for you, it can be easy to transfer that feeling of doubt and depression onto another writer, especially if it's one you don't know. When we look at these bad reviews, we are attempting to bridge the gap. Look at this person, we say. They're not perfect either. It's totally fine to do this, I promise. But do it in moderation, friend. When you put the focus back on yourself and your own work, you'll start to feel better. That's all for today, pals. Join me next time when I dig into more of your incredible question. Yeehaw, be the cowboy. Signed, Dad. I don't know why it's signed, Dad, but...
Well, they're very whimsical in their writing. That first paragraph was just them being like, I want to do some creative writing right now.
You're not a robot. Now, what if the question asker was like, follow-up question, beep, beep, boop, up. And they were like, hold up, are you a robot? I think they kind of hit it on the nose with like being like, you're more kind of questioning just yourself. Be like, are you being a good person right now? It's like, yeah. And then that's kind of like what we were saying earlier about like, yeah, if you're looking at the comments just to check in with yourself to be like, am I being a hater right now? Then you're doing the right thing. But if you're just doing it to be like, I hate this person, like, I want to make sure other people hate them too. I really want to make sure that's just kind of weird behavior.
I don't know why I started thinking about this, but do you guys have any beefs not with an artist, but their fan base?
Ooh,
I think, was it J. Cole who, when he dropped, people's response was like, man, people working in the Amazon warehouse are going to be going crazy tonight. And I was like, why are we taking shots? Why is that like the stereotype of, or that, or when something happens and someone says, this is big news for the unemployed.
Maybe not like directly, like I dislike their fan base, but there are artists where you're like, nobody can be normal about them. There's no way to read anything about this artist. Like Chapel Rowan, you know, like I think she makes good music, but has anybody ever said anything about her that's normal. She's good, but it's, I don't even know if it's her fans, but it's like her haters and her fans. It's like nobody can have a normal opinion.
Yeah.
Nobody can just be...
Like the fans may be delusional, but the haters are also kind of like stretching the truth a little bit or like trying to make something out of her. Yeah. Which is, yeah, I get what you mean by that. Yeah. A lot of opinions. Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about Drake. Like, cause like Drake's not an artist that I necessarily like hate nor love, you know, it just, I kind of feel like whatever about him, but Drake fans are truly delusional to where they're trying to tear down Kendrick's fan base for their love of Drake. And then also people who hate Drake are just kind of like, they're a little bit delusional too. Like, I think the Drake hate is really funny. And usually like I'd never like read those comments like, oh, they're hating like crazy, but kind of though, like on paper, like they are kind of delusional as well. So.
All right, cool. Do we want to get into the third segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So the third segment is going to be a little quiz. I looked up some quizzes online. I didn't really like them, so I made my own quiz. I took some questions from their quizzes, but it's going to be movies. It's going to be movies, and y'all are going to have to guess the rating of them, but not like the Rotten Tomato rating. Not like a 1 out of 10 stars rating. Nothing like that. Nothing like A plus through F minus rating. It's the MPA film rating. I'm talking G, PG, PG-13, R, NR, X, ooh, you name ooh it. They're going to be all...
NC-17, I think, is the
NC-17,
one you missed.
NC-17, thank you.
Is X a real rating? I think it's NC-17.
I don't think X is a real rating, because I have no movies with X on here. But...
And this is the American rating, not the Canadian one or somewhere
this
else?
This is American. Yeah, this is from the MPA.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an American podcast, Adrian.
Actually, for bonus points,
a?
Bonus points up top. And I'll let y'all both. So here's how the quiz is going to go. I'm going to name a movie. Y'all both give your guess on what it was rated. And then if y'all both guess the same, y'all both get it right, y'all both get a point. You know what I mean? So like, it's not going to be like who answers first. But the first.
What if I say it faster?
You just got 5 bonus points. That was really fast. Okay, but for bonus points, what do y'all think MPA stands for?
Motion Picture Association.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay, y'all both just got a point. Hot start for both of y'all. Very hot start. All right, first movie, The Matrix.
You can take away my point. I lied.
Doesn't matter. That's how this quiz works. If somebody answers first, you can just copy their answer.
I think The Matrix was PG-13.
PG-13.
Oh, I said it first, and you're just copying me. Interesting.
I think it was PG-12.
Adrian is right, and that was worth 10 points. So y'all are both saying PG-13?
Yeah, I think the idea here is that R is what you would assume, but actually it's PG-13 because not that much crazy stuff actually happens in it.
Interesting. I guess I'm kind of unpredictable, huh? But hey, guess what? Good news is y'all are still tied up, but it's still 1-1 because y'all only get that one right. It's rated R... It's rated violence.
I tried to play the meta too much.
For violence and language, a lot of people said it should have been rated PG-13 because the violence wasn't that bad in that movie. But they rated it R. So y'all still just...
It really wasn't. I don't even remember like blood showing. I feel like the bullets just kind of hit people.
It was the scene that when they were trying to shoot him and then he did like the whole like backwards thing with his back, it was just kind of
They were like, that broke his spine.
Yeah,
that's
too like
violent.
that was some gross freak ass shit they did there. This is not for kids.
I've told you guys about that before, right? Where I was talking to Pierce, I was like, what if they did that on Mythbusters? And they're like, can you actually die?
You got shot a lot.
It's just so much good.
Right when they shot him, he tried to lean back and it just and then as he's dying, you like, Miss Busted.
Jamie Heidemann is just laying on the floor bleeding. Miss Busted.
He's just he's riddled with bullets. And he's had to be like this.
And like the next episode. I would love if the next episode of Mythbusters, right after that, they try to curve the bullet like that movie wanted. And they just shot another guy. Like all their episodes after that are just bullet ones. Now Superman got shot in the eye in that one trailer.
Now there's some interesting physics to that one.
Yeah, they just shoot a guy in the eye. Okay. All right. So yeah, The Matrix is rated R. All right.
Wait, did you guys ever see the episode where they tested the son of a gun myth?
What does that mean?
Apparently, with a myth that somebody was shot during, like, the Revolutionary War, Civil War, a guy was shot through his penis and it took the semen and traveled it into a woman's uterus and impregnated her.
And what was the result?
They proved it was real. That could definitely happen.
Okay, yeah, cool.
How do they
cool.
prove it?
No, I'm joking. Obviously, they proved that that could not happen.
That'd be so funny if he shot his co-host, who's like a guy, and like the dick, be like, yeah, I shot your pussy. They had so many missed opportunities.
They shot Jamie's dick with who is the redhead behind it?
Carrie.
Carrie. To see if Carrie would get pregnant.
I would love if this all these episodes we're describing was like the first season they pitched to the to the network. They're like, we cannot pick up the show. Like, three people have died, and then you just shot your co-host in the dick.
You're like, Mythbusters.
We just shoot people.
I like even how we're saying it, like sperm is stored in the dick and not the ball.
Yeah.
He was in the middle of coming.
Yeah, my co-host is going to jerk off. But while he's jerking off, I'm going to shoot him in the dick. All right. Movie number two, Gremlins.
Oh, that actually was pretty violent, right? I want to go R, but now I feel like you wouldn't have done two R's in a row, so should I play the meta and say PG? No, I'm going to go R.
I'm going to go PG. But it kind of seems like a kid's movie. I think it was the first movie that was rated PG, or is there some historical aspect to it?
Oh, okay, remember. I'll say PG-13 then.
Hey, what? You? Okay, I'm doing PG.
Okay, final answers, Paul?
PG-13.
Adrian?
PG.
It is PG. This was the first, this is like credited as the movie that that caused MPA to make a PG-13 rating. It was this and a few other movies, but everybody says this is like the primary influence for making the PG-13 rating. That came out in 1984, which...
Wait, the PG or the PG-13?
Which made the PG-13 rating. But this is PG. Like, this movie is PG. But
because they had to release it as PG, and they were like, we need some shit for the future.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I see. So I got the fact slightly wrong.
Yeah, it just wasn't quite violent enough to make it R. But yeah, and this movie came out in 1984, which may help y'all with some future movies in this quiz. Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, I don't know this movie. Can you describe the plot to me?
This one was like they found like a ring or like a coin or something like that, and it was like there was like a curse behind it. They found an envelope, but it was like Justin Long and God, I forgot who else was the main. I forgot who was the main actress in that.
Justin Long at what point in his career?
Oh, this was like when we were in middle school, I think.
Yeah. Everyone in the theater was angry when that movie ended.
Dude, that ending was pretty bad, yeah. She literally got dragged to hell at the end.
I'm going to say R.
PG-13.
It is.
Oh, wait, if everybody saw it when we were kids, then it must have been PG-13. Okay, I'll say R. I'll stay with R.
I'll let you... I haven't done the answer yet. Final answer, Adrian, what do you say?
PG-13.
I'll stick with R. Let's let some controversy. Let's let some friction exist. That's the theme of this episode. It's okay to disagree.
It is PG-13.
You motherfucker, I changed my answer.
Oh, you did? Okay. Never mind. Paul wins.
And I know what MPA stands for.
Yeah, it was PG-13. I agree with Adrian. The ending of that movie really did suck. However, it did scare me a lot as a kid. That was a scary movie to me as a kid. I don't know if it would scare me now because I think I did look up that last scene like as an adult because I just remember it being so shitty and like even the special effects were. And I was like, yeah, why did this scare me so much as a kid? This was pretty bad, like special effects. But Airplane.
Oh, that's pretty clean. But that was before they had PG-13, so... Oh, that's tough. It has to be PG or R.
I thought it was pretty raunchy. I thought it was a raunchy little flick.
But it's like jokes making something go from PG to R. But maybe because they didn't have PG-13, they had to default to R. She did say, "Don't call me Shirley." Yeah, I have a drinking problem. That's a reference to alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go R. Not to be a pirate about it.
I mean, it doesn't feel like a kid's movie. It feels ridiculous to give it a PG rating, but...
Well, that's why I was asking about Canada at first, because I'm pretty sure everything's just rated G in Canada. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
PG, sure.
All right, final answers. Adrian, you say R. Paul, you said PG?
Yeah.
All right, Paul's catching up. It is PG. This was one of the movies that was released before the PG-13 rating. And just to get some context, that movie did show some boobs in it. So, which is kind of crazy. PG. Yeah, a kid can go look at some boobies at the movie theater. All right, next movie, Jaws.
I think part of the story behind it was that too many people saw it younger than they should have because it was rated PG.
I'm going to say maybe? R for sure.
Now you're going all pirate.
And you're saying PG, Adrian?
Yes, sir.
All right, Adrian gets the point for this one. It is PG. This was also one of the movies that, like, people say was a primary influence, but Gremlins had to be it because it came out, like, 10 years later. And shortly after that, they put it in. But, like, yeah, Jaws, it was rated.
I mean, there's, like, blood floating up in the water and stuff. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Toy Story 4. And that came out in 2019.
PG.
How hard is it to get a G rating nowadays?
That one has that scary scene where all the toys are about to get burned or what? Well,
incinerated?
Wait, that's Toy Story 3. I don't think I saw Toy Story 4. And I think there was that full penetration scene with the Woody
Andy?
And yeah, where Woody, with
Woody
showed,
and Andy?
Where Woody showed his Woody.
Oh yeah. I'm gonna go PG. I think every Toy Story is PG, right?
So y'all both say PG.
Yeah.
None of y'all got the point. It is rated G. Toy Story 4.
Oh, shit. Okay. Damn.
Here we go. Next movie. This is a documentary, actually. Justin Bieber, Never Say Never.
Oh.
PG.
I think that one's G. I think they want... Ooh.
Do y'all want to see what year it was made? Because I guess he can kind of give you like a sense of where he was in his career.
It's going to be like 2012, right?
2011.
I think it's G.
Okay, so Adrian, you say G?
Yeah.
I said PG because thing. I think that was like a tour movie probably, so it had lyrics that were inappropriate.
Baby.
That's a good point. Baby, unfortunately, baby. Though, it is rated G. So Adrian got the point on that one. Just to give y'all an update.
I think documentaries usually try and
try to cater it to most people. Yeah, okay. So yeah, Adrian has 5. Paul, you got 2. I see what you mean, Paul, too, because also with tour life and stuff. And also, like, I could see that documentary including some of the cancelable moments for Justin Bieber and be like, he overcame.
How old was he in that during that tour?
Probably, like, at least in his 20s.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know. Okay, Stephen King's It, but the one made in 2017.
Oh, It 2017. PG-13. Chapter 1?
PG-13 for Paul. What do you say, Adrian?
It's the first part of the two-part movie or whatever. I'm going to go R.
R, and then Paul, you say PG-13?
Mm-hmm.
It is rated R. It is...
What's the point of even trying anymore? I'm getting my ass kicked. I don't like this game.
You still have a chance. You still have a chance. I see what you mean.
Yeah, you're fine, Paul. You can do it.
I see the thought process behind PG-13, though, because it looks like it was such a popular movie, and I feel like, I don't know.
It is scary.
But there's also a lot of blood in it, and I think that's what, there's a lot of violence in it. Like, it's not like a...
Yeah, and there's the scene where they have the orgy in the sewer.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. 70s? 80s? Do you think they're ever going to do a sequel to that movie with Will Poulter?
No. I'll answer that for you.
No. 1982. So before they had the whole PG-13. So that narrows it down.
Poltergeist was scary. But it wasn't bloody.
But Jaws got a PG rating. But I'm still going to go R.
I'll go PG then.
Are you going PG because that stands for Poltergeist? Because in that case, you got it right. That is PG.
Let's go.
So every movie before the 80s was PG.
Yeah, pretty much.
Can we just agree that R apparently meant just... What movie was R before the 80s?
You'll find out.
Okay, here's the thing now. I'm no longer going to give the release dates because I don't want to give anything away. So you just got to know.
Oh, okay.
the original Peter Pan movie. You know what? I will give the release date for this one, just because there's so many Peter Pan movies.
Immediately
this
going back.
Came out in 1952, the original Peter Pan movie.
Oh.
Walt Disney.
G.
Can I ask if it's live action or animated?
Animated. That this one? Is that one that scared everybody.
Yeah, animated.
It's the one that scared everybody, but I'm going to say it's still G.
I'm going to go with PG because they showed an alternative lifestyle.
This is the one where the whale swallows him and then he goes to like that creepy like place with all the roller coasters. Have you never seen it? It's good.
That's Peter Pan?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I have no idea.
I don't know why a whale swallowed him. It's one of those movies where people are like, oh, it ruined my childhood. It was so creepy.
It's like a Watership Down.
So you're saying G, Paul?
Yeah.
And then, Adrian, you're saying PG?
Yeah.
Paul's back on the board. He has three.
Hey.
And I want to read a little AI summary of this from Google while it explains it.
Oh, yeah. What's Gemini got to say about this?
It says, in the 1953 Disney animated Peter Pan is rated G, but it contains elements that modern audiences may find inappropriate, including outdated racial stereotypes of Native Americans, scenes of characters smoking pipes and cigars, and frequent fantasy violence.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Mm, that's fine. Is racism a reason to be rated R? Is that part of the argument?
I think for me it is, but I gotta understand how with your political beliefs.
Oh, no, Woke
like,
King.
Yeah. All right. Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Paul and I watched that together.
R.
When we were kids.
No, that came out when we were in college. We weren't kids, so we could see R movies.
We were just little boys. I think it's probably R. Yeah, I think that one's got to be R. Yeah.
So
R for Lil Rel.
Ooh, nice. So y'all both saying R?
Because I feel like there's a scene where he's fighting a guy and he like pushes him against like the door behind him and it's like it shows him. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm. And he turns him around and starts kissing his neck.
All right. So yeah, it's rated R. Y'all both got a point. So. Paul, you do have a chance to only lose by 1 point at the best.
My dream.
Here we go. Nice. Okay. Juno.
Well, maybe if Adrian stops copying my answers, like with Get Out.
That one was too obvious.
Ooh,
also,
PG
Paul caught 13. Up that much. Damn.
PG-13. I don't think they dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah, honestly, this is one of the few movies on this. I think this and Peter Pan are the two movies I have not seen on this list, so I don't have any opinion on this.
It's probably PG-13, but I'll say PG.
All right. Paul is catching up. That is PG-13. All right. The Breakfast Club.
PG.
Oh. They show some pretty nasty things in that movie. Bad home lives, smoking, drinking.
Porking.
Molly Ringwald. I think it was probably before PG-13 was a thing. Yeah, I think it's got to be PG, right?
But, I mean, you should give me a chance, though.
But I did that once already, but, like, I can't do it just to do it.
What about the scene where Bender is like, you know what I got for Christmas? My dad, he pulled me up by the collar, and he said, here's a pack of smokes.
That's pretty fun Christmas gift. My dad gave me cigarettes? That'd be cool. Like, thanks, Papa. All right, are y'all both saying PG?
Thanks for the cigarettes. No, I'm saying
R. Yeah, I think we're both saying PG.
Wait, is that true? Adrian, are you going PG?
No, I'll do R.
You'll do R.
I'll do PG-13, just in case it was around.
All right. Final answer, Adrian. What do you want?
PG-13.
And Paul, what do you want?
PG.
Are you sure you want to say PG, Paul?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
It's rated R. Shut up. Yes.
Dang.
So none of y'all got that.
Because of all the stuff that I said?
How is that rated R, but Jaws was rated PG? What was going on?
All right. So this is the last movie one, and then we have a bonus question. And you know what? I'll make the bonus question worth 5 points to give Paul a chance to win.
Okay.
This movie, The Green Mile, was released in 1999, which was a year before Y2K. So keep that in mind.
Green Mile, it's a Stephen King one, so maybe R. I'll go with R.
Adrian, you say R, and then you said PG, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. It is rated R. So Adrian got that one. Okay.
Well, I don't want to do the bonus anymore. It doesn't matter.
Well, here's the thing. Adrian is up 4 points. I will make the bonus 4.1 points.
3.9 points.
Just enough where Paul still can't win. I'll make it 4.1 points. So you can still win, Paul, just not by much. Not even by a full point. Okay. At the Illinois-based GKC Theaters, which were eventually bought out by AMC Theaters.
Yeah, it's one of the ones that they release Ghibli films through and stuff
like
that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Kids 17 and under were able to view R-rated movies without being accompanied by a parent, as long as a parent went to them to the movies at least on one occasion and signed them up for this specific thing. Like, what was that called? Like, they had to go with a parent, pay $2 and sign something, and then they gave you this thing, and then as long as you had that and you brought it to every movie.
So much of that was able to be triviafied, and then you made the most nebulous thing. The part that was the trivia question.
Like,
what was the name of the pass? Is that what you're asking us?
Yeah.
For being able to watch R-rated movies as a kid.
And it was only $2, and as long as your parent was there to sign it when you first got it, then you can go watch an R-rated movie if you're under the age of 17.
Did I ever tell you about when I told you about that before when we were at the Times Village Square? What is the one in
Lexington? I think Village Square.
Village Square, yeah. A bunch of kids asked my dad to buy them tickets for an R-rated movie. And, like, all of this happened in front of the concession stand, so the person selling the tickets asks for the manager to come over. And so my dad does it because he's cool. And the manager's like, okay, but you guys have to all sit in the same row together. And so we just watched, me and my sister watched the horror movie we were going to go watch with my dad with, like, 5 random white kids. And the manager came in to make sure we weren't splitting up. Hmm. So what's, oh, wait, the answer. Right. N-word pass. All right, what's the name of this pass?
Do y'all not have an answer yet? I'm not going to just tell you. Do y'all have the answers? Do you have any guesses?
They called it a hall pass.
Ooh.
Oh, that's good. The cool kids club. I don't know.
So it was called the R card, which I thought that was so funny because it just sounds like an N-word pass for the R word.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It was called the R card. So, Adrian, you won with a final score of 8-5.
Big fact. Don't let it get to your head if your favorite reviewer or just a popular critic online doesn't like your favorite things. Different opinions make the world go round. It's good that we don't all have the same opinion on everything.
And my no cappuccino is I rate this episode a 5 out of 5. I rate this podcast 5 stars. And if you're listening, I rate your life 5 stars.
And my no cap is I rate your life 0 stars. Fuck this podcast. Fuck everything. No, I'm playing. My big fact is don't have any room in your heart for hate, all right? Fill it up with love. Don't have no room in your heart for hate. That's going to make you a hateful person. Come on, what is this, the Hateful Eight?